And welcome to The Business of Family Business. It's presented by CMA, and every week we talk to different family businesses from across the St. Louis region, and we let them tell their own story. This week, a very familiar one across the area, Chesterfield Fence and Deck. Represented in studio, their CEO, Tom Thiel, is joined by Dan Bean from CMA. We're thrilled to have him here in studio. And if you're a family business and you would like your story told, reach out to Dan Bean at CMA. Go to cmaconsult.com. We start with a little background information. The CEO, Tom Thiel, of Chesterfield Fence and Deck. As a son-in-law, you were able to become president of the company that you first started working with 20 years ago. How did you get and rise to the title of president?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Oh, many years. Years of experience, of organizational accomplishment. And I was asked to head up the organization. But I started there as... I took the job because in college I was a part-time computer consultant and did a lot of IT work on the side. Had built a niche of, at the time, attorneys and other professionals, and I bid a project for Chesterfield, what was at the time Chesterfield Fence Company. It was just a neat little company. I learned that I was approaching my senior year in college and learned that they were looking for a project manager. As a child, I helped my grandfather install fencing, stretching barbed wire, and helping him drive T-post at a very young age. So I thought, well, I think I can do this. And it was intriguing to me. It was interesting to me. My computer business had grown to where it was really kind of, I thought, wow, it's creating challenges with my curriculum. So I thought, well, I'll step into something more steady. That'd be easier for me. I can finish my college up and I'll step right into a career. Well, it was the opposite. It was, man, gangbusters. And so how it happened, it was somewhat of an element of chance, but I saw a huge opportunity with this company. It looked like somewhat of a niche product. It looked like something that had pretty steady and maybe even aggressive demand. Fencing was a need product. People need it for pools, for pets, for play, for their children. I thought, wow, this is intriguing to me. It's organic. So the rest is somewhat history.
So you started in 1997, right?
97, May of 97.
You met your wife on the job.
I did.
When did you meet her?
Well, I met her. She wasn't working for the company yet. I've got 5 years on her, so she was still in high school.
Okay.
I teased her about that. I said, well, at the time, I don't know if I, you know, but the many years before her and I became an item. But met her once she graduated college. She took an interest in the company as well and employed herself with Chesterfield Fence and Deck Company. So we had quite a history, even pre-marriage, working together and building the business.
And it just so happens her dad was the owner of the business.
Yes.
Which is interesting, too, by itself, because you became and now are president of Chesterfield Fence and Deck. You married the previous owner's daughter. And
yes.
How long were you married for before you transitioned to that president role?
7 years.
7 years. I'm just curious. This is, to me, this is a little bit different. The transition we see a lot has to do with, you know, the direct kids, right? The sons and daughters, but you're coming in as an in-law. Was there any competition or when it came to the transition of the company?
Not to that, because I have, like I said, as stated before, both Sherry and Kevin both work in the business, have worked in the business some time now, but I was on the scene much earlier. Also, at the time, business, as it grew, had different needs. So I went very quickly from being a fencing project manager, one of two or three at the time, to a sales management / strategic planning type role, to retaining those responsibilities and eventually becoming a general manager. And then when Dennis got sick, it was almost a natural transition. So I was basically running the, as general manager, running the daily operations. So really the president thing was more of a formality than anything.
Let me ask you this, Dan Bean from CMA. How often does that happen where an in-law could become the CEO or the president as the next generation leadership of a company?
So in family business, in-laws are sometimes called outlaws. And I would say, I've never seen research on that question, but I'm going to say 5 to 10% of the time a son-in-law becomes the president or CEO, the leader of the organization. It is a member of the family, but it's not a blood member of the family. And most family businesses would prefer to have a natural child lead the business, but son-in-law or daughter-in-law is a very close second if they feel that presents a much better opportunity for the business and for the family.
Yeah. There's a trend from some of the businesses we've talked to here on the Business of Family Business. It seems like the people that are transitioning or may have become the president or CEO of a company, one of the common trends is they seem to all have some kind of IT or technical background. Is that pretty common too?
I don't know that IT or technical background is common. Usually they have experience in more than one function of the business. So 70% of what we learn comes from on-the-job experience, 20% comes from coaching, and 10% comes from seminars or training. So on-the-job experience teaches us most of what we know, and we learn a lot more from failures and successes. So there's three fundamental functions in most family businesses. There is sales and business development. They get the business. There's operations. They deliver the business, and there's finance and administration. They keep track of the money and the data and all the regulatory reporting that has to go on. So in terms of who comes up to be the president or CEO, it can be from one of those three functions. The operations is oftentimes where that next generation leader comes from. Business development probably would be next, and finance would probably be third. There is no right or wrong. There is where is the talent that's going to best lead the business and lead the family. That's what's critical for the family to figure out who to be that next generation leader.
So let me ask you this, Tom. Your portfolio of things that you offer with Chesterfield Fence and Deck, what are the type of services that you guys will offer?
I call it our four core. And we've transitioned to each one throughout time. So it was Chesterfield Fence and Deck Company from 1968 all the way to about 2000 was almost solely a fence company. And we saw Dennis and myself had identified a need in the market for decking. This is right about the time where low maintenance decking, at the time vinyl, and then shortly thereafter composite decking became popularized. So a lot of the early adopters of that were starting to really seek a product like that out that had uniqueness and a different aesthetic and low maintenance and a lifetime warranty or something like anywhere from a 20 to a lifetime warranty. And we jumped on it. Certainly learned very quickly that decking was very different than fencing, but faced the challenges and now we're the largest, maybe the largest in the country of our type. Of fence and deck companies, largely because we identified early the need for people wanting more than just a square or rectangular deck on the back of their house. Soon thereafter, just by virtue of doing decking, a portion of that clientele would ask, can you put a roof over that deck? Or could you screen it in? Or could you convert my existing screen room into an all-season room? So there was a slow transition over time, but eventually became a sunroom division. And then our most recent endeavor is decorative concrete.
So I want to know, when is the right time to expand? When is it time to think about diversifying the different things you're doing? That's coming up next with Tom Thiel of Chesterfield Fence and Deck, who joins us this week on the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA. And welcome back to the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA. Joining us in studio, the CEO of Chesterfield Fence and Deck, Tom Thiel, also Dan Bean from CMA.
For the most part, you've grown as opposed to diversifying almost.
Yes.
So how has that impacted the amount of employees you've had over the years?
Vastly.
Yeah.
When I started there, there's a huge transition. When I started there, they were trying to convert what was a lot of subcontractors into employees, which presented huge, huge challenges financially, challenges culturally, challenges getting people to adopt to a system they weren't used to. They were used to being able to do side jobs, for example, and poach projects, like a neighbor's project off of our project.
Okay.
So the neighbor would come running out, hey, could you do my fence? Well, all that had to end. So it created two solid to three solid years worth of challenges. The lion's share of the, say, 40 employees we had then is now 130 in round numbers today, almost the vast majority of them on our payroll.
Wow, 130.
Yep.
It's a lot of people.
Oh, it's a very large amount of people.
I understand you have a very nice facility where you organize all of this out of.
We do.
Yeah.
What's the organization at this facility, and what kind of things do you keep on hand? What kind of things do you have to special order? Tell me a little bit about that.
We outgrew the building we're in. As I had mentioned before, that was about 9,700 square feet, split about half, 50-50, 50% being warehousing, 50% office,
mm-hmm.
and just a little bit of showroom space. We, again, identified it, a want and a need in the marketplace to people want to come in and see. We thought that, hey, wouldn't it be neat, instead of having them see a piece of literature, have them come out and test drive it, mm-hmm. have them take a look at a deck, look at a fence, show them samples, sit them down, be a consultant to them so that you maximize their investment.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of it. The other part of it is we had very badly, very significantly outgrown our ability to operate out of that building. It says the business, it was perfectly fine being a $3 million business for a number of years, kind of steadily growing, but you know, hovering plus or minus around that number, then all of a sudden implementing a growth strategy and within a number of years becoming a $6 or $7 to $10 million company, which is about what we were when we moved out of that building. We were busting at the seams.
I bet.
So we definitely needed to increase our space.
Yeah. You were telling me about your inventory was affected. There was a point in 93 with the flood that could have ended Chesterfield Fence and Deck. Can you talk about what happened there?
I wasn't not there, but the stories are still told today.
Yeah.
The flood wiped out, although they knew it was coming. They're pretty sure that the levee was going to break, so they started moving some inventory off of the facility that they operated out of. Most of it was washed out with the flood.
Mm-hmm.
And so that created great challenges, because not only was the inventory wiped out, all of the office space was the desks, the files, the paper, I mean, everything gone. There was a huge rebuilding, but one of the things that I find intriguing, and even today, there's still a lot of loyalty we have engendered with, and it goes both ways between us and our vendor relationships. So vendors, once they'd caught wind of this, the very next week, were shipping materials in to help get us back up and running. Within a very short order, we were back up and operating out of a trailer off Old State Road. The rest is history, but certainly a huge, huge challenge. I mean, some of this was not insured. I mean, the loss was pretty significant.
Really?
Yeah.
See, when I think about insurance, I figure a lot of that would be covered. So what wouldn't be covered under something like that?
They didn't have flood insurance.
Oh, they didn't have flood insurance at all.
I don't believe that they did.
Yikes. So
it was all self-insured.
Do you have flood insurance now?
Oh, yes. Yeah, on everything. We hold our old facility that we operated of was now a leaseholding.
Mm-hmm.
2010, we moved into our current facility, and we've recently in 2014 constructed another 20,000 square foot facility to house the operations of our decking and our room divisions,
mm-hmm.
as well as their inventory. The current facility we have is where our showroom, our main office management, and our fence team operates out of, mm-hmm. including the inventory. And then we also do some manufacturing. So we manufacture our own vinyl fencing and our own vinyl railing. And then machine, we've always machined a lot of our wood pickets. So we dog our own pickets. We can gothic our pickets. We can put a nice custom point on a fence, wood fence post. Or if someone wants something special, we can do that. So we do some fabrication as well.
When we come back, we learn more about the family part of the family business at Chesterfield Fence and Deck. What's the makeup there? Who makes up what role? We continue next on the Business of Family Business presented by CMA. And let me encourage you, if you know a family business across the St. Louis region and you think they have a story that's worth being told, let them know about this program. We have it every Saturday on KMOX, and you can actually listen back to previous episodes by going to KMOX.com in the podcast section. Tell that family business you know that they should reach out to Dan Bean at CMA, cmaconsult.com, and we'd love to get him on a future show to tell their story. And welcome back to the Business of Family Business presented by CMA. If you're a family business and you would like your story told just like Chesterfield Fence and Deck this week, just go to cmaconsult.com and reach out to Dan Bean. Let him know you'd like your story told. We'd love to highlight you in a future episode.
Are there any other family members that you currently work with now?
Dennis Wibbenmeyer, the founder of Chesterfield Fence and Deck Company's wife, still works in the business,
okay.
and she's the sole owner. She retains sole ownership of the company. Her son and her daughter, Kevin and Sherry both work in the business. Kevin is in production management, and Sherry is our director of marketing.
Were they already established in their roles, or did they rise in different roles in the company as well over time?
Kevin worked in sales for a short stint, and then had more of an affinity to towards project management.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity was good at the time for him to step over into the deck team because they needed a lot of help. And that's where he stayed. It's grown with him. He's grown with it. Really likes where he's at as a vice president of that division.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, her background's in marketing. That's still what she does today. She started in marketing and she still does marketing.
How do you currently market yourself?
To me, first and foremost, we become more and more laser guided with focus on this by the day. Is a lot of it is how we treat people.
Mm-hmm.
We do almost 3,000 projects a year. I want them treated with the utmost of respect. And so when my words, and I say it over and over and over again, when you document up an order, that's a promise, and we have a promise to fulfill. There can be no real puffery that you see, and you know, I guess and to some extent it's even legal. I don't like it.
No.
I want people, a lot of what we do is managing an experience, managing expectation. And so to me, why our referral base is 20% and seems to be taking up towards 30% is because of that. The better we get at that, the more pull-through business we'll have, especially since we do more than just fencing.
Yeah.
So I want the lady or gentleman or the family that buys fence to come back for the deck because we're the safe choice, because we treat people fairly, because we treated people by the golden rule. But we're also, in terms of what you typically think of when you think of marketing, is we're very, very diversified. We have mm-hmm. a radio campaign. We're very focused on internet marketing. We, mm-hmm. we stay up on the trends with that. We retool our website. We have a we have an average life cycle of our websites. We like to keep it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry and I dive into the website and edit it ourselves a bit in terms of the content.
Yeah.
And we also pay a couple consultants to help us out with various forms of internet advertising. We do print, and we're very, very diversified. We'll do much, much larger than that $3 million company than where we started at. And so it's all planned and all appropriate. Mm-hmm. We have a 10-year plan where we want to be. So it's all predicated on that.
You said roughly 3,000 jobs a year?
Yes.
That's 8 or 9 a day going on. Is that right? You're finishing 8 or 9 a day?
It's funny you mentioned that. I was talking to a friend yesterday, and he asked the same question after the kids' soccer practice. And I told him just that. I pinch myself. I take a step back from it. It's almost unbelievable
to me.
It's
a lot of projects.
It's a lot to watch.
It's amazing.
It's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. Trying to organize all of that, too.
Yes.
It's difficult.
Yes.
So you have some really good people in place to help you with something like that.
That's everything.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's a people business. I tell our people that all the time. We're people working with people, mm-hmm. and we're working on what could be their most valuable asset, their home. We have to treat it with the utmost of care.
Yeah.
So
I want to ask Dan about this because I do want to get more into your 10-year plan and some of the things that where you want to take the business from here at Chesterfield Fence and Deck. But Dan, being from CMA, some of the things you've heard here so far, you still have some family members involved. You still have an ownership in the sense where Tom is the president, but there's still ownership in the company. And the company is growing 130, 140 employees.
Yes.
They're going right now, 3,000 jobs a year, which is pretty remarkable. What are some of your impressions so far that you've heard from Chesterfield Fence and Deck?
Well, one, they've been a very successful business. They have grown tremendously since Tom came into the business, and they made it through an exceedingly rough time, the flood of 93, that could very easily have taken the business off the face of the earth.
Mm, with no flood insurance.
With no flood insurance.
Yeah.
So it's a very resilient company. It's a very resilient family. Tom personally has done very well by joining the business. He did marry the owner's daughter. That might have helped a little bit. But he also became president. Again, that son-in-law being president is definitely not the norm. But he seems to have led the business very well, seems to be supported by the family. All of that speaks very well for the business.
Yeah. Does Chesterfield Fence and Deck have a board of directors?
We do.
Okay. Who's on that board?
We currently have an inside board. So some of the key players, as well as Franca, Sherry, and Kevin, reside on the serve on the board.
Mm-hmm. Who do you look for when it comes to outside guidance? Is there any people you trust when it comes to looking for outside opinions?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I feel, in terms of my key relationships, I have some key banking relationships. Mm-hmm. And good bankers are good resources, because if you're thinking about an investment, one of which is the facility I referenced that we built in 14, maybe a bit premature, but you have to be forward thinking in business. So the first thing I did was bounce it off our CPA and our banker, which is another resource that you need to have in your back pocket,
mm-hmm.
because CPAs are obviously very cost conscious. In the tax environment we're in today, a good CPA can keep you out of a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly need a couple attorneys in terms of their area of specialization. We have a real estate attorney. We have general counsel.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the manufacturing we do are protecting our own brand, our trademarks. We have a trademark attorney, an attorney we consult to from time to time of, mm-hmm. hey, if we develop this, at what point would we trademark it, or how would we, or is it even... can you even get a trademark?
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell people when they ask me, hey, what do you need, or what are the tools you need? You need, first and foremost, a good CPA, a couple good banking relationships, counsel, because by virtue of doing business, you're putting yourself out there. Mm-hmm. There's liability.
You talk about trademarks. Do you have any patents? You talked about there's some things you've developed.
We don't currently yet. We're pursuing some, we've got our eye on some opportunities we see just by, in the business we're in, there are some things we think that, due to the experience that we've achieved over the years, we think we can do it better in terms mm-hmm. of product. And so we're looking at that. We have a trademark on our name.
Right.
And that came about. I didn't realize that, hey, how important that was. That was an experience, because you saw competitors, their logos become closer and closer uh-huh. and closer to looking like ours, uh-huh. which then you start to see confusion, which is when I retained counsel and said, hey, what can we do about this? Yeah. This is not good. You know, this look at this one. This looks just like our logo.
Mm-hmm.
So we made the right moves. We filed the right documents, and now we protect. That's a protected mark.
You talked about how you've already taken over from a leadership transition now that you're president, but ownership, which would be your mother-in-law, is still the owner. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So have you guys talked about ownership transitions or anything like that?
We have planning in place,
mm-hmm.
but you know, that's a moving body. Currently, we talk about succession a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about what the ownership will look like. Currently, Kevin and Sherry will jointly own the business
mm-hmm.
When that time comes. But in terms of transitioning, currently, we're all comfortable with Franca retaining the ownership solely.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes you can, if you're not careful, you can upset the apple cart. There's really no need. She works in the business. She's a good, she plays the owner, the role of owner really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I'm a big fan of, if something's working, don't change it.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you change it and there's upside, but with something like that, there's really no need.
When we come back one last time, CEO of Chesterfield Fence and Deck, Tom Thiel, talks about maybe ownership transition, another part. There could be leadership transitions as well. He talks about the ownership side. That's coming up on the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA. Welcome back one last time to the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA. And joining us this week was Tom Thiel, CEO of Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And if you would like your family business story told, hey, there's so many great stories to share. We want to hear from you. Contact Dan Bean at cmaconsult.com, cmaconsult.com. Can I ask you, is there anything when it comes to transition, are you going to be looking at any partial ownership when there is that transition?
We talk about that. I mean, that's part of what where we're at now, because mm-hmm. unfortunately, Dennis left us. He passed away in 2014. So my goal was to make sure that we were secure. We do have some loans on the buildings that we own.
Mm-hmm.
And these bankers were wanting to know, hey, who's the guy? I mean, do you have an employment agreement? What mm-hmm. what are you going to do if this happens? There was no trust in place. And so like my whole goal when Dennis got sick was to make sure that, hey, we were prepared, God forbid, for a transition.
Mm-hmm.
If you can avoid chaos, do it. You know, and when you don't have a firm plan and you don't communicate the plan, you wind up having chaos. So
yeah.
The first step was prepare for the transition that wound up eventually taking place. And then that, now we're moving, our eyes are focused on the future. So yeah. That's really where the discussions are today, is what's that look like 2, 3, 5, 10, 20 years from now.
Dan Bean from CMA, how important is that to have some sort of plan in place when it comes to both leadership and ownership transition in a company?
So both are part of a generational transition, and we counsel to transition leadership before ownership to make sure the next generation is up to the task, whether that's a, you know, a son, a daughter, a son-in-law, a daughter-in-law, it matters not. You want to make sure they can lead the organization and that the next generation will support that chosen leader before you transition ownership. Mm-hmm. Once parents transition ownership, all they have left is parental influence. They have no authority once the majority of voting control has been transferred. Mm-hmm. So when that event happens, that's who's going to control the organization. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that when you do transfer voting stock, that it's going to an individual or group who will hold the company together. That will be the glue. And Franca is your mother-in-law, is that correct? So right now she serves as glue to hold the family together. She and Tom, I suspect, hold the business together. Mm-hmm. But holding that family together is the critical thing. Tom, as a son-in-law, does not have, he's not a direct, he's an indirect married-in member of the family. Mm-hmm. So who's going to hold the family together after Franca's time is a question. And it could be Tom. The son-in-law can do that. It's very seldom the case, but it's not impossible.
You have a 10-year plan you're looking towards for the company. A lot can happen in 10 years. So what kind of, what are your goals when it comes to growing Chesterfield Fence and Deck?
There are many different directions we go, and we mm-hmm. talk about it a lot. Because what I've learned over time is you can talk about a lot of things. As they say, talk is cheap. Mm-hmm. Only until you focus on it, and I mean focus with everything you have, and build a plan and do all the research and make sure that you can win with that plan, mm-hmm. does it really become reality? The manufacturing endeavor. That was something that we used to sell against companies that manufactured their own vinyl fencing. So all of a sudden, you become the hypocrite. Well, it wasn't that. Mm-hmm. The strategy and the story needed to be different. My thought was, at the time, it wasn't appropriate for us because we were not doing the volume sufficient to support the capital investment and the cash outlay for the inventory you had to hold in raw goods to make that pay off for you. As we grew, the story changed, and that happens a lot in business. Mm-hmm. But again, you have to have a plan. How do you make the investment in equipment pay off? How do you minimize waste? How do you minimize mistakes? How do you move the inventory? Because you all of a sudden you have to invest into, say, at the time, what was at the time? Because I remember asking for the check, $100,000. Mm-hmm. How do you make it pay off? So you have to have a plan. That required a marketing plan. Mm-hmm. You were not buying anyone else's product anymore, so you had to develop your own literature and sales support mm-hmm. materials. It took us a whole winter to do it. Those challenges, I always tell people, if it was easy, then everyone would do it and it wouldn't be worth anything. But those challenges, if you attack them and approach them bravely and with a strategic plan, can be made to pay off, paid up. They'll pay you.
For the past 20 years, you've been involved in the business in various roles. What are some of the challenges you've seen that have faced the company?
The biggest one that comes to my mind was the big recession, because mm-hmm. we were in a transition phase. We had outgrown the building that we were currently operating out of and had already made investments into a state-of-the-art 25,000 square foot production, manufacturing, warehousing, and showroom facility, invested a lot of our capital into that endeavor. Mm-hmm. Fast forward a number of months, all of a sudden the bottom falls out of the market. The sunroom business that I had mentioned, no one was buying sunrooms. Mm-hmm. That all went away in the middle of all of this. And we have a title company fraud us for $40,000 of disbursements. There's great challenges throughout the whole thing.
2008 was the big struggle. That's where the housing markets and all the problems started to hit.
It was. Oddly for us, 8 wasn't a great year. It was 2007 was a record year. Mm-hmm. 2008 was flat. So we really didn't have any bragging rights. Mm-hmm. and we didn't make much money because the market started to soften up, and we started to give a lot more discounting to earn business to keep our crews to keep working.
Right.
So what that does is it squeezes your margin, and on top of investing money into a new project, which is the building I'm talking about, it wound up being very thin.
You said you had an issue with a title company. There was a, you said defrauding? Something happened along those lines?
Yeah, there was someone, an employee in the company that embezzled about $40,000.
Oh, wow. How did you discover that?
Well, the money was gone.
How long were they doing it for?
And then they were trying to figure out what happened, but they weren't dispersing money. Mm-hmm. So then we have trades coming after us. First, it was the general contractor that was working for us saying, hey, you guys got to pay these people. I said, well, we released funds. Mm-hmm. We'd call the title company. Nope. They find out that, well, where'd the money go? Well, we found out that it wasn't just us. It was a number of projects that they were dispersing for. We were just a fraction of the money that was embezzled. So
it's terrible.
We wound up getting it back. Thankfully, the title company, after some back and forth, put the money back in our account. But it was a challenge.
That hurt your trust issues with people?
Yeah, for a short period of time. Yeah.
When different roadblocks presented themselves, you've been able to work through them. What advice would you have for people when roadblocks do come up to be able to persist and move on and continue on?
Like you said, make sure you're surrounded by good people. Make sure you're surrounded by, you're acquainted with professionals, and just have a never give up attitude. Don't ever quit, because there's very, very, very few situations in life where there's not a workaround or a way out of a situation, and especially in business. And I do believe, I've seen on social media where it says, well, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And I believe that. I believe that you should always be learning too. And that's what helps you navigate out of those situations.
Let me ask this to you, Dan Bean. How important is that to always have the learning mind, being able to want to learn more, and then specifically when we look at Chesterfield Fence and Deck, the things they're doing to try to improve themselves, despite some of the roadblocks that continue to pop up?
It's very important. It's critical, particularly for the president or the CEO, the top person. The marketplace is constantly changing. Technology is constantly changing. Business models are constantly changing. Sometimes those are minor changes. Sometimes those are major fundamental changes in the industry. But businesses that do better always have an open mind to, let's try something new. Let's take a step forward. Let's change. Let's innovate. Let's experiment. Let's learn from it. If it works, let's do it again. If it doesn't work, okay, let's see what we can learn from it, and then let's go try something else. But that curiosity is one of the fundamental key success factors of a CEO. They have to be willing to change and lead change, and sometimes push the organization to change when they might prefer not to.
Tom, everything I've heard from you, resilient. A lot of things thrown your way, you're able to work through them. It's pretty remarkable and amazing. Is there any words of advice you'd like to give family businesses listening right now?
Be flexible. Be willing to learn. I mean, not be a lifetime scholar of your own business, your trade, whatever it is you do. Subscribe to the trade journals. Read up on them. Stay up on new trends. Try to identify newer areas, new opportunities in the market, ways that you can relate and take advantage of that. Exploit your competitive strengths. No, never give up. Go out there and win.
Never give up. Tom and Dan, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
I want to thank both Dan Bean from CMA and also Tom Thiel, who joins us from Chesterfield Fence and Deck. All the great insights from there. By the way, if you liked this story from a local family business, a couple of different things you can do. One, tell a family business this show exists on KMOX and direct them to the website and say, hey, go to cmaconsult.com. I want to hear your story on the business of family business. Just go to cmaconsult.com. Tell a family business about it so we can highlight them in the future. I also want to let you know you can go back and listen to previous episodes of this at KMOX.com. Just go to the podcast section and you can listen to some of the great interviews we've had in the past and continue to do so in the future. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. It was a pleasure to be with you this week on the Business of Family Business presented by CMA. We'll see you soon.